Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello and welcome to the Arrowhead Addict Podcast. My name is Matt Connor. I'm here with my friend Sterling Holmes. We have another special friend ready to join us soon. But Sterling, since we're good friends, I at least want to ask you if you're doing okay. You're fresh off a Blink 182 show, is that right? You just saw Matt Verderam, our friend in common.
Yeah, former Arrowhead Addict podcast co-host Verderam. Huge mistake. I stayed with him at his house, and I also stayed with Richard one night, our producer. So huge mistake for those two guys. Some addresses will be getting dropped in the near future. But yeah, it was a lot of fun. We went to Wrigley on Sunday and then finished the night with a Blink 182 concert. Felt like I was in high school again. And then I realized I'm trying to jump around. I go, nope, my back says I am not in high school anymore. But it was a lot of fun, man. It was a great time.
Well, good. Glad you had a good time. You had a lot more fun than I did. You covered all the small things. Tonight, we're covering all the big things with our friend Tim Grunhard. Look, man, this guy was literally the center of attention for like all the prime years I'm watching Chiefs football. Few people know the sort of long-term success. We're anxious to have him on. I'm talking about him like he's not here, but he's right here. Might as well bring him right in. Our friend Tim Grunhard is here. Tim, thanks so much for joining the show.
It's great to be out with you guys, Matt and Sterling. I'm jealous you were at Wrigley. That's one of my favorite places in the whole world to be. You know, growing up on the south side of Chicago, but was a Cub fan. So, I had a lot of fights. Maybe one of the reasons why I made it to the NFL is because of the abuse I took from the Southsiders being a Cub fan. But Wrigley's a great place. And the Blink, 182? Probably a little bit past my time. Maybe more of the Who and the Doors and that kind of stuff. But Wrigley certainly is in my wheelhouse, so I'm pretty jealous about that.
Yeah, it was a great time. First time ever going. It's just in a neighborhood. Just walking, and all of a sudden you're like, That's the stadium. I'm going to walk in right now. It's great. A lot of bars around there, which, of course, I had to partake. You know, I had to partake in a bar or two, but it was really cool.
You know, my first time, Tim, by the way, at Wrigley Field, I'm sitting in the bleachers, which is probably not a good thing to do at first. And so suddenly left field starts chanting, "Right field sucks." And I was like, are they talking about the Mets outfielder? And then they're all looking at us like in right field. And I'm like, well, wait, what's going on? And then the fans all around me start chanting, "Left field sucks." And then it was just Cub fans against Cub fans. I mean, it was pretty miserable at the time, the franchise was. So they all just turned on each other. And then there were like brawls that broke out. I've never seen anything like it in a home crowd.
You know, Matt, that happened in a huddle with the Chiefs. We used to say the left side sucks, the right side sucks. As a center, I agreed with both and disagreed with both. So the right side sucks, left side sucks. Yeah, so next time sit in center field, you don't have to deal with all that crap. So, but you know, it's a rowdy crowd. It's a lot of fun. It reminds me a little bit of Arrowhead. You know, the people are just in it. They go to all the games. Even when the Cubs stink, and and that's most of the time, you know, the Chiefs have been doing great of late. But the fan base in Chicago for the Cubs, it reminds me a lot of the fan base for the Kansas City Chiefs. They're always there. They dress up in the colors, and they just have a blast. So, you know, it's kind of a neat deal for anybody to get to Wrigley Field. I think if you have a bucket list, Wrigley Field's got to be on it. And if you've never been to Arrowhead, which I'm sure that 99.9% of the people that are watching this podcast have been there, but if you're that 0.1%, you got to get to Arrowhead and experience that. That's certainly a bucket list too.
With Kansas City hosting the draft, all eyes were here. It was great. I love the, I keep calling it, it was a celebration of Kansas City. Not just the Chiefs, not just the Super Bowl, obviously, but having it at Union Station. All eyes were on Kansas City. For me, growing up here, living here, that's so fun. You know, we understand how awesome Kansas City is, but seeing everyone understand and take in the amazing views and the city itself was so cool. What was your take on the Chiefs in Kansas City hosting the NFL draft?
Yeah, it was awesome. A couple things. Number one, I thought the city did great. The fans did great. There was no major incidences. You know, I was nervous that, you know, something would happen. It didn't. You know, it's just the way I am. And it was great. The fans did a wonderful job of representing, making people feel welcome. Even Raider fans, I guess, felt semi-welcome in Kansas City. Number two, the NFL does a great job of the production. They did a wonderful job. They used all of the things that were available at Union Station and the World War One Memorial to emphasize the lights, the celebration, all the infrastructure. It was really, really cool. So congratulations to the NFL. And then, you know, lastly, you know, I was really proud of like the ambassador Chiefs and even the current players. A lot of guys made it a point of emphasis to get down there and do some events. I probably did 5 or 6 or 7 different events that surrounded the draft. And I was at one event at a 2000 and Grand for, it was a local KC-23 party. And these guys from Iowa came in. And this was Wednesday, probably about 3 or 4 o'clock. It wasn't very crowded, but they said, hey, we came down. This is what we do. We go to all the different drafts. And I thought that was pretty cool. They've been to, I think, 5 or 6 or 7 in a row. And they said, you know, we're really excited to see what Kansas City's going to offer. So, I was telling them, hey, go to this thing, go to that thing. And then we had a party on Saturday night with the Kansas City Chiefs ambassador and Third and Long. That had CeeLo Green and Blaine Howard and Uncle Cracker there. I said, guys, you got to end your experience in Kansas City with this event. There's probably going to be 25 or 30 ex-Kansas City Chief players there. You know, it's going to be a lot of fun. So they showed up. And by the end of it, the beginning of it, they're like, yeah, you know, Nashville, Kansas City, we kind of like Nashville a little bit better. But Kansas City was right there, and then by the end, we got them. We said, you know, you got to hang out with 30 Kansas City Chiefs ex-players. You got to see Uncle Cracker, CeeLo Green. You got to hang out at Harrah's with us, have a great time, open bar, all this stuff. And they said, you know what? You guys won. So Kansas City, we won the battle over Nashville.
Man.
Yeah, that wasn't easy to do. Nashville had like 600,000 people down there. We had, you know, some people were saying near 400,000 people, but – we certainly represent it. So great job to Kansas City.
Man, you're literally an ambassador. Like you're doing the good work there. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, well, you know what? Just so proud of this city, so proud of this organization, proud of the Hunt family and the current players and the guys that give so much to this team. And, you know, listen, guys like you doing the Arrowhead Addict podcast and, you know, everybody kind of keeping the Chiefs on the forefront. On the front page of sports here in Kansas City. It's really important. It's important to the Hunt family. It's important to the Chiefs organization. And one of the reasons why the Chiefs do so well, not only with attendance, but just, you know, people watching the games. And I think last Super Bowl was one of the most watched Super Bowls of all time. Mm-hmm. And Kansas City certainly represented. It's because we keep Kansas City and the Kansas City Chiefs on the forefront.
One of the common threads of small businesses is that so few are responsible for so many things. That's what makes it vital to have the right people in the right places. This is where LinkedIn Jobs comes in, and that's why we want to tell you about them. When you're hiring for your small business, you need to find quality professionals that are right for the role. And that's why LinkedIn Jobs is so vital. They have the tools to help you find the right people for your team faster and for free. Look, LinkedIn isn't just another job board. They have a vast network of more than 1 billion professionals, which makes it the best place to hire. It gives you access to professionals you can't find anywhere else, and they do all that while making the process easy and intuitive. Look, hiring is easy when you have that many qualified candidates. So easy, in fact, that 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. 2.5 million small businesses are already using LinkedIn for hiring. You should too. Post your job for free at linkedin.com/arrowhead. That's linkedin.com/arrowhead to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
One of the things we just talked about with Trent was the fact that the Chiefs announced Dante Hall during the draft as their, you know, the Hall of Fame, the Ring of Honor inductee. You know, you've been able to also be a part of that, you know, sort of rarefied company there. And it just made me wonder, like, you know, as you reflect back on all the achievements, I'm sure that was like such a special moment. I was hoping that you could kind of talk about that, like when you learned that was going to happen, like how that the whole journey was for you. And then what do you think that's going to mean for Dante as he goes forward?
Well, the journey started about 33 years ago when I was drafted by the Kansas City Chiefs in the second round, 40th pick. Carl called and talked to Marty, talked to Carl, talked to Lamar. Talked to Howard, the offensive line coach, and then Marty got back on the phone and said, hey, listen, we want you to come in tomorrow, which was, I was like, wow, that's pretty quick, to a Red Coder dinner. And flew in for the dinner, and part of the experience was Carl showed me around the stadium. So we walked through all the offices, went to the weight room, which was in the stadium at that time, and then went out of the field, and I kind of looked up and I saw the names that were on the ring above, and I kind of pointed up. I said, wow, that's pretty cool. What's that all about? And he goes, those are our Hall of Famers. That's our Ring of Fame. Mm-hmm. And he said, someday, you know, you work hard and things break the right ways, you know, without injuries, everything else, you have an opportunity, we believe, to be in that. And that was always kind of my goal from the beginning. Every time I walked on the field, you know, I was a creature of habit. I put my socks on at the same time. I put my pads on at the same time. I went to the same spot in the end zone to warm up, put my helmet down. And one of the things I always did was look around at the names and think about, okay, what do I need to do personally to give myself an opportunity to be a part of this organization's Ring of Fame, this Hall of Fame. And that was a conscious thought before every game. And, you know, I had to wait 20 years, which – it actually worked out better for me. I would have appreciated it if it was 5 years after. But, you know, I got to experience it with my kids. You know, my kids, three of the four were Division I athletes. Two girls played football. And they understood the sacrifices and how hard it is to excel in a sport. And they really appreciated and loved being a part of it. If they were maybe 8 or 9 years old or 10 years old, they would have been out there. They probably – you know, would have thought it was cool, but they wouldn't have thought so much of it. So it really worked out at a perfect time. And to answer your question, it was awesome. So I'll never forget this. We were on vacation in Florida, and the phone rang. It was my cell phone, and it was like somewhere in Texas. And I said, somebody's probably trying to sell me, like, you know, car repair insurance or something. Like, I'm not answering that. And they left a message like, that's weird. So we left a message. I listened. And it was like, you know, hi, this is Clark Hunt from the Kansas City Chiefs. If you get an opportunity, please give me a call back. And I'm thinking, oh, God, what did I do now? Did I say something on the radio? Did I, you know, I get the first thing in my mind was I'm going to get scolded for something. I'm getting called in on the carpet. because you guys know as well as I do. I mean, I like to just get my opinion when I'm doing doing radio, and sometimes the Chiefs like it, sometimes they don't. And you know, I'm not saying that I haven't been called in a bunch, but I have been called in saying, "Hey, take it easy, guys." So I got on the phone and first Clark said, "Hey, how's the family?" And then, of course, right after that, I said, "Congratulations on the Super Bowl." And it was tough losing that last Super Bowl, but you were two in a row. And he said, "Yeah, it was tough. We're gonna have to make some adjustments to go to the Super Bowl again and win it." And this is right after the Tampa Super Bowl. So, and then he said, "Hey, we just want to let you know that we're gonna put you in the Ring of Fame and Hall of Honor." And man, I choked up. It was very, very special to me. Like I said, when I got drafted by the Chiefs, I wasn't particularly worried about going in the Hall of Fame. I wasn't particularly worried about, any of those accolades. I just wanted to be a part of this organization and be a part of that Ring of Fame. And staying here 11 years and playing for this organization was really important to me and giving me an opportunity to go up there. And I expressed that with Dante. I'm very close with Dante. Dante and I went to Germany, to Munich together, to do some B-roll and do some stuff to promote the game that was supposed to be a couple of years ago, the Tom Brady coming out of retirement game. They kind of screwed that up. So Dante and I are good friends, and I'm really happy for him. He deserves it. And boy, it's a great honor to have your name up there. Mm.
I know we had it on our show sheet, and now folks in the chat, I see Chris already wanting to know now. Let's get into it. Creed Humphrey, that's always going to be something I'm sure you're going to be asked over the next, well, hopefully 10 plus years. Hopefully he signs that second contract here in Kansas City. Two questions for you. One, what is just your opinion of Creed Humphrey? And two, the Chiefs, basically ever since you, they've not given second contracts out to centers. Mitch Morse had some injuries, obviously, the concussions, but he was a very good center for a long time here. Rodney Hudson was a very good, maybe the best center in the NFL for a while here, and then that second contract came up. The Chiefs decided to part ways. Two, I guess, do you think he gets a second contract here in Kansas City?
Well, I think he'll get offered a second contract. Now, whether it's the kind of money that he wants remains to be seen. I think he's going to demand a high price, and whether the Chiefs want to go ahead and match that price that he wants, and he deserves it. He's one of the best centers in the NFL right now, and he does a great job. So the pros for him is I love the way he finishes. I love the way he communicates. I love his toughness. And the only negative I could say is at times I think that he can get busy, a little bit busier in the middle. Sometimes he kind of just – we always say, don't buy a ticket to the game. If you're just kind of sitting around, looking for somebody, go light somebody up. And that was one of my favorite things to do is, when you're pass blocking and you're holding one guy off and you're watching the linebacker and the linebacker doesn't come, you go hunt somebody up and go lay him out. And that's one of the things I'd like to see him do more. If I had an opportunity to talk to him this offseason, which I may, say, listen, go hunt people up, man. Play with that toughness. Every shot, every obviously legal. It's legal. Every time you hit somebody, every time you take a little bit off of that, it helps out in the fourth quarter. Next thing you know, those guys, they're looking around for you, and they're not looking to get to the quarterback. So that's an important thing that I think he needs to improve on. But I'm going to tell you something. His strength at the point of attack is great. Getting to the second level does a wonderful job. He's got great feet. He's got great plays with great leverage, got great balance. I just like to see him finish a little bit more at the end of plays in his pass protection.
Mm. Hey, Tim, I'd actually love to get your thoughts on the line overall, especially as it's been reconstructed, on the outsides, on the bookends this spring. Of course, Donovan Smith was just thrown into the mix. A lot of that maybe will shake out in ways that we can't yet know. But from what you're seeing, what do you think of this line compared to the lines that have won Super Bowls? And what are you still worried about?
Well, if you want to compare it to last year's line, this is a better line. And everybody's like, well, what about Orlando Brown? Well, Orlando Brown, he graded out in the upper 70s, low 80s most of the time in pass protection. And then, with his run blocking, he was one of the better run blockers. The Orlando Brown thing was never going to happen. Orlando Brown wanted a lot of money. The Chiefs didn't see the value in giving him number one or number two money. It just wasn't going to happen. That doesn't mean that one part of the equation was wrong and the other part was right. It just wasn't going to happen. So Orlando Brown being here in Kansas City, and all indications are he's a great leader in that room. He was great in Kansas City. We wish him well until he plays the Kansas City Chiefs with the Bengal team, which we don't like very well. So they went out and they got was a Juwan Taylor. Mm-hmm. And just kind of on a whim called up the orthopedic doctor for the Jacksonville Jaguars, who I know very, very well. Why I know orthopedic doctors so well, I don't know, but I do know a bunch of them. And I said, hey, tell me about this Taylor guy that's coming here to Kansas City. He goes, I know him a little bit. He's a really nice guy. But so he said, you know, one of the guys who was involved with his draft, who's an offensive coordinator, is no longer with the organization. He's coaching in the USFL. I think he's one of the head coaches in the USFL now. Said, hey, you know, give him a call. And I was like, I'm not going to call him. And lo and behold, like a day later, the guy calls me. He says, hey, I heard you want to talk about Juwan Taylor. I said, yeah. So talk to me about him. He goes, number one, he's a great guy. He's awesome in the locker room. He's a great team player. You're going to have no issues with him, no problems with him. Number two, he is very, very physical. He's got some athleticism to him. You guys are going to love him. We hated to see him go. And I said, what about left tackle? And the guy said, I don't see it. I said, what do you mean? He goes, he's just not a left tackle. You know what? We looked at it a little bit when we drafted him and everything else, but he just fits. He is a prototypical right tackle. So when they moved to left tackle, I was kind of a head scratcher for me. It felt like they were trying to take a square peg and put it in a round hole. So I thought, okay, they're going to address this with the draft. And when it didn't work out in the draft, I was looking for something to happen. And that's when they went out and they got Donovan Smith. Now, Donovan Smith, listen, now, if you look at his Pro Football Focus stats, the last year was bad. He was hurt, playing injured, didn't play very well last year. But this is a great Brett Veach kind of signing. He's coming off a rough year because of injuries. But the years before that, he graded out pretty well. In fact, I think he was ranked in the top 20 in tackles for the last couple of years with Tampa. So if he can live up to that and kind of build into this system, you know, Tom Brady's not the easiest guy to work with, and Tom Brady's not the easiest guy to block for. He's kind of a statue back there. When things break down, he just kind of folds up. Patrick Mahomes doesn't do that. So I think that's going to help him too. So the long-winded answer to the very short question is, I think the tackles are in better position right now than they were last year at this time. I think both of these guys are an upgrade. Orlando and Smith. Now, Smith has to – the arrow's pointing up, but Smith has to bring his game up a little bit. But I think the right tackle is much, much better. And I think the Chiefs' offensive line is going to be right there with some of the Super Bowl lines that you were talking about.
I agree that I think right tackle's in a better spot. I do think Andrew Wiley at times got a little bit of a bad rap. If you look at what he was getting paid, yeah, he overperformed that contract. I think Wiley deserves a ton of credit. I guess my concern here, and obviously it's a sunk cost at this point, the deal is done. You now have Juwan Taylor as the highest paid right tackle in football. That gives me a little bit of concern. And when it comes to left tackle, I'm with you on Donovan Smith. The years before last year, he was a very good left tackle, very solid. But you can make the case, and I'm trying to do it myself. Last year, the entire Tampa Bay Buccaneers offensive line was decimated with injury. When you saw Orlando Brown Jr. last year, his worst games were when Joe Tooney was gone. Eric Fisher had a lot of trouble here when there was the revolving door at left guard. The no continuous players playing alongside him obviously brings everyone else's game down. You don't know what he's going to do. You think you do, but you don't always do. You like having that sort of that gel on the offensive line. I don't get why people are acting like Orlando Brown Jr. was – I'm not saying you are by any means, but some fans acting like Orlando Brown Jr. was some bum, and all of a sudden Donovan Smith is this massive upgrade at left tackle. I don't know if I see that. It feels like people understand he wanted that money. He wasn't going to get that money. But then you look at what he signed for the Bengals with, and I'm personally sitting here saying, well, if he was going to sign for Kansas City for that, I would have made that deal.
Yeah, and you know what? And it's a funny deal because the people that I've talked to, for one reason or another, it just wasn't going to happen here in Kansas City. And I've talked to some of the coaches and some of the people out there, and he expected a certain amount from Kansas City, and they weren't going to get there. So he had to go somewhere else. And you're exactly right. He didn't get paid what he thought he was going to get paid. But the thing about this Donovan Smith deal is that if Donovan Smith would have had the years of the past, not last year, but the last couple of years before that, they wouldn't have been able to afford him either because he was going to get paid a bunch. So he had a down year, and it was Brett Veach went out and found a guy that had a down year, and for a lot of reasons. Number one, he was injured. Number two, there's a bunch of guys around there injured. It was kind of a piecemeal offensive line. Number three, Tom Brady. Listen, let's face it. Tom Brady probably should not have come back. You know, he was very, very limited what he could do back there. So there was a lot of check marks that were put in the column of crappy for Donovan Smith out there. So if he can go to an offensive line that, you know, with Tooney and with Smith and with Humphreys and now with Taylor, I mean, you look at this offensive line, it's a pretty solid offensive line. The one thing that Orlando Brown struggled with, and it'll be interesting to see what Donovan Smith does, is Orlando Brown did not match up well against AFC West defensive ends. He just didn't. I think he's in a great spot. I think he matches up pretty well with the guys in AFC North. You look at Crosby and you look at Bosa and you look at the guys that they have at the defensive ends. They're very athletic. They play with great leverage. And one of the things that the knock against Orlando Brown, and if he was on this podcast, he'd probably admit to it too. He's a bit of a waistbender. He's a little bit of a leaner. His punch is – his head and his hands are connected too much with his punch. So when he goes for the punch, his head is down, and if you're off a little bit or you miss a little bit, you're off balance. And when you're off balance against a speed rusher or an athletic guy, then they're going to take advantage of that. But when he went against big guys, he went against the larger, the more physical defensive ends, he kicked the crap out of them. He did really well. So – I think Orlando Brown brought a Super Bowl here to Kansas City, and very, very happy they had the opportunity to come here. He left happy. You know, the Chiefs, they left, they're happy that he came. So, you know, sometimes, you know, things like this happen. And I wouldn't be surprised if Donovan Smith is a one-year guy too. He has a really good year this year, with all indications are that Andy Heck and this offensive line, you know, they do a really good job scheming and good job with Patrick Mahomes back there to making the offensive line right, that, you know, he's going to have a good year, and they may not be able to afford him next year either. But they couldn't get somebody in the draft. It didn't work out. And they needed to find a guy who is a proven left tackle. And I was telling you right now, Taylor was not that guy.
Hey, let's talk about the future of the line since we have you here and we're talking, you know, this place you know so well. Like, some people wonder if Joe Tooney is maybe going to turn into someone too expensive. You talk about a major expense at guard, interior lines, typically not where teams spend, you know, so heavily. And yet earlier we're talking about the benefits of playing next to a guy like Tooney and having that elevate your own game. What do you think is going to happen there? And then also, as we're looking forward, you said the Chiefs weren't able to get a guy in the draft. Would you then suspect that next year's first round is probably pretty prime for an offensive tackle, you know, if the value's there?
Matt, are you saying we have to talk about the draft again already?
Yeah. Sorry. I can see myself out.
No. You know, I don't know who the 2000, what would be, 24 class of tackles coming out. Haven't quite dug into that yet, Matt. But
Tim just told me to leave the show, so I'm going to just – I'll see myself out, guys.
But to answer your question, yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, the Chiefs have got to go out there and they've got to go find themselves a left tackle in the draft. And I think all indications are that there was one or two guys that they liked, and if they would have fell to a spot where the Chiefs could move up to get them, they would have. But just didn't work out that way. So they had to go find a piece to put in there, a guy who had a proven record, a guy who knows how to play that position. And I think it's good for the Chiefs. But to answer your question, yeah, I'm surprised. I mean, hopefully Donovan Smith has an unbelievable year and decides, hey, I want to – listen, he's going to be 30. You know, 30 isn't what he used to be. When I turned 30, I felt like I got run over by a truck and, you know, I could barely get out of bed. But remember now, our practices were a little bit different. Two-a-days were a little bit different. Practices during the week were a little bit different. By the time we got to week 16 and 17, it was a mash unit in there because Marty shot and I were practices. They don't do it that way anymore. So I think you can – the new 30 is probably 34. I think 34 is about that age where offensive linemen and defensive linemen start to kind of wane a little bit. Now, there's always exceptions to the rule. But that's usually used to be when I was playing, when you hit 30, that was kind of you were starting to go downhill a little bit. So he's got about 3 or 4 years of good football left. And, you know, maybe the Chiefs could find a way to keep him around and he could be a guy that could come in here and be a solid left tackle. Now, listen, hey, I'm with you guys, man. I saw the stats from last year, 13 holding calls. That's not going to fly in Kansas City. That's not going to fly for Andy Reid. And Patrick Mahomes is going to lose his proverbial mind if he throws the ball down the field for a touchdown and there's another holding call on Donovan Smith. So he's got to learn to get his ass in the right position and not be grabbing. Remember, if I was going to talk to him, one of the things that he does, he's got a really bad habit of this, is when you're getting beaten pass protection, don't pull, push. You know, get guys off balance. You buy a little bit of time. Too many times, offensive linemen, they get in a position and they're getting beat because it happens, man. This is part of it. And you start, if once they get out of your body and you start to grab and try and pull them back, which is the natural thing to do, it's a natural thing to kind of goes through your mind. But if you could think about it, don't pull, push. Push them, get them off balance, have to restart and kind of get back into their treads a little bit and get in the quarterback. That's another second and a half. You're not going to get the 10-yard penalty, and the quarterback's going to get it off. So he's got to do a better job. And I know Andy Heck very well. We played together for 3 years at Notre Dame under Joe Moore. And one of the things that Joe Moore always taught was, hey, get to the hip and push. If you're getting beat, get to the hip and push. Get them off balance. You get their body in a bad position, and that'll buy more time for your quarterback. So I would expect those holding calls to drop off exponentially with Andy Heck and Patrick Mahomes back there.
I love Doug in Case or Kansas saying, Tim, we need you on the offensive line now. Looks like you're in great shape. I can confirm Grunny's in great shape. I see him sometimes the 8-10. I mean, look at that. It's absurd. I'm 29. I'm sitting here like, no chance. I'm a stick over here. Like walking, no Oklahoma drills for me against him in the hallway. That's not going to happen. Well, that's dangerous.
I appreciate it. Who was it? Was it Doug, you said?
Yeah, Doug.
Doug, I appreciate it, but you can't see me walk. When you see me walk, you say, we don't want that guy in the field anymore. I may look the part, but as soon as I get up and start walking, you're like, oh, my God, that thing, he's lost all the tread of those tires. So I appreciate it. You know, my dad used to say all the time when we were younger, you know, he said, you know, you're big now and you got to keep being big. But he said, you know what, there's not a lot of 70-year-old 300-pounders out there. So, you know, when you're done playing, you got to lose weight. And it was a process for me. At one point, a couple of years after, I got the 345. And I got pictures of that. It was ugly. So, you know, just made some life changes and started to work out and go to a trainer. And now it's, you know, it's just part of what I do every day. And I enjoy it, and it's fun, and I'm trying to stay healthy. So I appreciate it, but you won't be seeing me blocking any 325-pound Chris Joneses anytime soon. I promise you that.
You had such sustained success for so long. You obviously took quote-unquote team-friendly deals to stay here, build your legacy in Kansas City, and look how it paid off in the Ring of Honor, the Chiefs Hall of Fame, right? Like, that was valuable and something that mattered to you. In today's NFL, it seems like that loyalty, the team-friendly deal per se, seems a little bit overblown. I know a lot of fans, they would say, oh, they'll play for the Chiefs. They want to stay here because they want to win a championship or they want to have that hometown discount. We've not really seen that a lot. We've seen it from Mahomes and Travis Kelce, but didn't see it with Tyreek. We probably won't see it with Chris Jones to an extent. We know how much he wants to get paid. We didn't see it with Orlando Brown Jr. Is that a mindset switch from, you know, your time playing to the day? Or is that also you were the rare case of you wanted to build that legacy here? You understood the value behind it.
Well, I always go back to when people ask this question, a Lou Holtz quote. And I have a little bit of a cold here or an allergy, so I apologize. Maybe it would be a little bit better of a Lou Holtzism here. You'd say, Jim Grunhardt, are your kids happy? Yes, coach. Is your wife happy? Yes, coach. Don't mess with happy. So the reality is, you know, my kids were happy here in Kansas City. My wife loved it here in Kansas City. I loved it here in Kansas City. I could have went and took a contract for another couple $100,000, maybe on the back end and gone somewhere else. But I would have had to, you know, take my family away from the friends, take my wife out of the house and the neighborhood that she loves. And I loved being here in Kansas City. And, you know, the fans here have always been great. They've supported me with, you know, talk about that book. You know, they supported me with the book. I've done radio shows. I've done commercials. And I just stayed active in the community. And you know what? Listen, you got to be faithful in order for people to be loyal to you. and everything in life, whether it's your marriages or whether it's your kids or your friends, you know, be faithful, be loyal, and they'll be loyal back. And that's what I've found for me, giving up a couple bucks on the back end, you know, on the long run. I've been here in Kansas City now for 33 years. I've been, you know, I've been here longer than anywhere else in my life. And this is my home. And, you know, if I would have left and then, you know, led somewhere else for 5 or 6 years and come back, I'm not sure if my relationship would have been the same as it is now with Kansas City and the people at Kansas City and the fans of the Kansas City Chiefs and the media of the Kansas City Chiefs. I've built great relationships and business relationships. And for me, in the long run, that paid off in tenfold. So, but to answer your question, no, you're not going to see that. The way the contracts are, the way the salary cap is, the way that agents are, you know, remember, everybody out there, I don't know how many of you guys out there are watching this, are going to sign an agent anytime soon, but the agent works for you. You don't work for the agent. And too many times young guys think they're working for the agent and the agent is going to tell me, listen, you tell the agent to pound sand, I'm staying here in Kansas City. And that's what I did.
Hmm. Hey, one more for you here, Tim. Sterling brought up the sustained success. I'm looking and it occurs to me that the least amount of wins you ever had in a year was 7. Like there was never a total bottoming out. And maybe before Andy Reid arrives, maybe your stretch of success would have been considered, you know, the most successful, like, long-term era of the franchise. It occurred to me that few people could really speak to what it takes, like when you were with Marty, with those teams that had that sustained run of success, playoff contention, those expectations. How difficult is that? And like, I guess I'm wondering if you could speak to that, enjoying that for, like, I mean, 11 years is such a long time, but then to see KC now do it on a whole other level, it just feels like we're all just like watching history unfold and we kind of know it, but I thought you could probably speak to that better than most people could.
Yeah, Matt, that's a great question. And listen, we had some unbelievable success in the 90s. I think we won 100 and some games. And I think it was either the second most by a franchise in the 90s. I think maybe the 49ers were number one. We were number two. So we had a very successful run in the 90s. But we never won a Super Bowl. And there's a lot of reasons for that. We can go through a lot of guesses and hypotheses on why that happened. But the reality is we just didn't get it done. But, you know, just like you guys do, I don't know if you have any nephews or little brothers or people in the family that you go out and you watch them play baseball, you watch them play football or basketball, and you're sitting there and you're just so proud, your chest is pumped up, and you're so happy for them that they're having success. And that's the way we feel. I wasn't sure how I would feel. Maybe the first couple of years out, I was like, gosh, if the Chiefs go win the Super Bowl now, I'm going to be pissed. Right? You know, I played 11 years and then all of a sudden I retire and Dick Vermeil comes in and they're just scoring points left and right. And I go, if they go to the Super Bowl and win, I'm going to be pissed. But I will tell you that mindset changed, maybe just got a little bit older, but I'm just so proud of these guys. We call them our little brothers. I mean, we're out there watching them play and watching them compete and the way they carry themselves in the community and the way they do the right things around town and the way that they played is awesome. It's like watching your little brother go out there and play. And we're just as proud and we live vicariously through them. And Sterling and Matt, the kind of the cool thing is too, now that being a KC Chiefs ambassadors, we get a Super Bowl ring, so I don't have to get a beat up to get these Super Bowl rings anymore. So my second one's coming in the mail here for fairly soon. Got number one, good number two. So keep on winning, guys. I appreciate the Super Bowl ring.
That's incredible. By the way, make sure you guys go out and get View from the Center, a book by Tim Grunard. Not only is it Chiefs Hall of Famer, he's now an author. And if you want more stories, honestly, the stories in here are incredible. It also kind of details and outlines the relationship that your era of Kansas City, the relationship you guys basically created and started and still continuously have with the fans. You guys basically brought back Chiefs Kingdom. You guys started the Chiefs Kingdom, if you will. It's a really cool book. The stories in there are extremely, extremely fun. I talk to Nick Lowry pretty much once or twice a week. And I've yet to bring up the snowball incident yet with him. That's in here. I don't know what your thoughts are on that. Should I bring that up to him? Does he like that story?
Absolutely. Is that one? Okay. Doesn't matter whether he likes it or not. It'd be better if he didn't. Right? It's fun to push Nick's buttons. I'll tell you that. I love Nick, but I love pushing his buttons too. But yeah, Sterling, you're exactly right, man. You know, one of the reasons why I wrote this book, not only to tell stories about, you know, the Kansas City Chiefs games and tell stories about players and relationships, but more importantly than that, it was about the relationship that was built in the 90s between the fans and the players. And that was really important. And it was a point of emphasis from Carl Peterson and Lamar Hunt and Marty Schottenheimer, you know, to go out and do radio shows, to go to hospitals, to go to high schools, to go do events. Some of the stuff that, quite frankly, guys just can't do this in this day and age for one reason or another, whether it's security or whether it's cell phones, whether it's videos and all that kind of stuff. I mean, I'll tell you what, if they had cell phones back in the day in the levee, I probably wouldn't have lasted 3 years in the league because we had some crazy times there. And the fans were all part of it. You know what? They were in on it too. We had a wonderful time and, you know, everybody took care of each other and nobody ever said anything. So we had an unbelievable time. And you know, people always talk about Arrowhead as a college-like atmosphere. You guys have heard that before. Wow, it's like a college-like atmosphere. And people often say that it's because it's really loud and people wear the colors of the team because that's, you know, kind of what colleges do. But it goes so much deeper than that. And the reason why it goes deeper than that was one of the things that we tried to do is we tried to build a personal relationship with the fans through those things. So when they went to the game on Sunday, they said, yeah, we were with Grunny and Derek at the levee on Thursday. We're hanging out with him. They're great guys. And they, you know, they fell in love with us and we fell in love with them. And, you know, we tried to make eye contact as much as possible in the stands and share that our souls with them. Get back to the college atmosphere, you know, when you're walking around college at K-State or KU or MU or wherever, you know, you see the quarterback going into the history class or you see the offensive lineman in the cafeteria or whatever, and you get to see him, you say hello, maybe bump into him, maybe even sit next to him in class, and you build a relationship. And that's why college kids have such a, you know, great fan base with the players, because they're classmates, right? I mean, let's face it, they're classmates. And one of the things we wanted that feel too, that they had personal ownership of this team. They had a personal relationship with the fans. And when they came out to the game, they felt like they were a part of it. So win, lose, or draw, they were always out there because those were our guys. And that's the way that they thought, and that's the way we thought. And that's why this fan base has been so great over the last 30 years, is because of the relationships that were built in the 90s. So the foundation for what we're experiencing now is built in the 90s, where Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce and Chris Jones can hold up Lombardi trophies on that foundation. And that's why we love it so much. Mm.
Love it. Love it. If you want those stories and more, check out Tim's book. We will put a link to where you can purchase it in the information section of wherever you're taking in this podcast or the streaming video. Tim, thanks so much for joining us today. We so appreciate you taking out the time.
Yeah, you guys are great, man. Let's visit again during the football season and talk about some stuff. It'd be great. And we'll see if Creed Humphrey's listening to me and starts finishing some guys late and smashing them. We'll see if Donovan's pushing and not pulling. And we'll see if Andy gets those guys right, which I think he will. When I say Andy, I mean Andy Heck, because he's a great offensive line coach. Hey, guys, thanks so much for having me on and anytime. And you guys are great. And I can see why there's so many addicts in the Arrowhead Attic. You guys do a wonderful job.
Thanks. Thanks so much, Tim.
We'll for sure have him on during the regular season.
What a great guy.
Yeah. Just outstanding.
I love that whole era. I mean, like, you know, it's like all the nostalgia for me, like having watched, you know, I mean, beginning to end that whole era. And I mean, I remember watching the draft that he was drafted, and then the whole thing. So yeah, just so cool it's so cool to see him so active now.
Yeah.
But also such a testament, you know, we were talking about the great job that KC did during the draft, you know, that he would be like, he's a Chicago native, went to Notre Dame, could have easily settled back in the general region, Northern Indiana, you know, into Illinois. And, you know, to be won over by KC, to then stay there, to then raise your kids there, and then now be proud of that and call that home. And yeah, it's just, yeah, just cool in every way. Love it.
I always think it's so cool personally. He should be the example you show other players who are trying to build a legacy. Yeah. When you're looking at guys and your agents, and I know that he mentioned agents are trying to get as much money as possible. I understand that. But he's the perfect example of why legacy means so much. He's so beloved still. How many years after playing a game for this organization, yeah, everyone knows who he is. Everyone wants to hear what he has to say. He still feels like part of the Chiefs family. Like, it's incredible. You have that bond. You don't have that with guys who are here for 4 years, 3 years, and then leave. You don't have that same sort of yep, feeling. You know, guys, even like a little different, but let's just say Tyrann Mathieu wasn't drafted here, but had 3 great years here. He won't be remembered in the same vein as Tim Grunard. Like, these Chiefs Hall of Famers, you look up there, and as you mentioned, you see your name. That legacy means something. I wonder if we will ever go back to that. Again, I understand it's tough to turn down the money. It's very difficult. If you're offered, let's just say hypothetically, $10 million a year or $8 million a year, it's tough to turn that down. But when you can see the impact long after your playing days are over, like he mentioned,
yeah,
don't mess with happy. Sometimes that means more. I just think he should be the perfect example of why, yeah, you stay, of why you build a legacy and not just chase the dollar signs.
Yeah. And you know what? Even if you, I think you could be thinking about dollar signs too, though, right? Like, I mean, he's getting Super Bowl rings in the mail, like legitimately that's worth something. But beyond that, it's like, if you put yourself in a place long-term, like Tim has in Kansas City, you have even like business opportunities, local, yeah, contacts and connections, where when the game is done with you, you're not done with the game or the region, right? That you, like, you don't have to then suddenly go back to the wall and go, oh, what do I do? Because I played for 3 different teams during my career. You know, I think some things are lost in, like, even Tyreek Hill. I think some things are lost when you end your career with maybe 3 years, 4 years in Miami than if you'd spent 11 years, 10 years in Kansas City, despite how great those years were. So, yeah, I love him as that example. It was great to chat with him. You know, there's credibility and there's, yeah, the chips that you earn begin to multiply exponentially over time. Like, it's not a linear curve. I think it's a steep growth curve. And when you're entering those later years, I think you really earn more and more and more. So,
yeah.
So yeah, you brought up Tyrann Mathieu. It reminds me, like, how do you remember Tyrann Mathieu versus Dan Sorensen? Like, but versus Dan Sorensen, right? And I don't mean like talent wise, but I'm thinking, okay, 3 great years from Tyrann. Great. We got a Super Bowl, but also a guy like John McGraw, who was always like a scrappy safety who barely made the team, but he made it for years on special teams, or a guy like Dirty Dan, who was like, you know, kind of like a fringe roster player who like climbs the ladder, makes real clutch plays when it counts. Like, maybe that guy is actually remembered more and has like better long-term contracts or relationships locally, because it's 8-year versus 3 kind of thing. Even though Tyron's clearly the better player. I don't know. Yeah. I'm just thinking through those things. But
before we move forward, I do want to say shout out to everyone who's sticking around. All the comments were absolutely outstanding. I really do appreciate it, even though we do have a Bengals fan for some reason in here. You know, you think they're trying to focus more on winning a Super Bowl, you know, but maybe not. They have, I guess, nothing better to do. But want to shout out DraftKings. If you guys want to do us a favor, go to DraftKings and use promo code Arrowhead. Bet $5 on any sport. Get $150 in bonus bets back instantly. Win or lose. New customers only. 21 plus and physically present in Kansas. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-522-4700. Valid 1 offer per customer, minimum $5 deposit and $5 wager required. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets and expire 7 days after being awarded. See full terms at DraftKings.com. Again, promo code Arrowhead at DraftKings.
That was good. That was good. Hey, we want to sweep up some Chiefs news here. Since, you know, Sterling, I only get to see you once a week. I don't know. Like, you know, we got to clean up things that come up from time to time. Just want to get your opinion on a few things here. And one is the fact that I'm watching Chris Jones on Twitter make these overtures saying, yo, Frank, come back and let's finish what we started. I'm not sure what else there is to finish when you've already won two Super Bowls. It's like, is that like, oh, we were supposed to win three and now we haven't and we need you to come back and finish that? I mean, I'm here for it if that's what it is. What do you think of the open – I mean, now that we've added Felix, now that we've added Charles, the room is not as devoid of talent as it was before. Would you be excited to add Frank back to that mix, and or do you think it'll happen?
Excited, sure. Or fine, I guess. Like, I'm not going to be like just thrilled, but I do think there's something as far as the playoff Frank. There obviously is something there. He becomes a prime Frank Clark, the Shark. When it's the regular season, he's not. But the Chiefs don't really need him for the regular season. Like, with FAU, Charles Aminihu, George Karloftis, Mike Dana being a viable rotational piece, sure, they could use another guy, but I don't think it's necessarily a must for them. I personally think that Frank Clark is in his Melvin Ingram, Carlos Dunlap, Terrell Suggs, kind of that type of player, 25 to 30% snap share type of dude. Instead of, what did you say you played last year? I know you have the number. It was like 69%. It was a crazy amount of the snap share he received last year. Reps. And I don't think he's there anymore. I just don't. But he's only 29. And I think in his heart of hearts, he probably thinks, all right, this is my last chance to get a decent contract. Maybe a two-year, maybe a three-year deal. I'm 29. I had this playoff success. Some team will sign him. And I think that team might be the Miami Dolphins. I do. If you look at the Dolphins right now, you look at their defensive line. They have Emmanuel Ogba penciled in as a starter. Don't know how that's going to work out. He's fine, but I think they need some guys. Frank Clark makes sense. The Dolphins obviously don't have any issues taking some former Chiefs, obviously with Tyreek Hill, Emmanuel Ogba. It's in their MO. If they think that can give them any sort of competitive advantage, I'm sure the Dolphins will probably try and do that. And again, if Frank Clark thinks he can get a two-year, three-year, decent-sized contract while also playing a starter's share of the snaps, that seems like a logical place for him to go, or a team that's trying to take that next step, a team that wants that playoff success, that playoff acumen on the roster. The Jacksonville Jaguars seem to be in that boat as well. If I was a betting man, I would say a team in Florida lands Frank Clark. Hey, a shark, he needs to be around water, baby.
Wait, what makes you think that Ogba doesn't have many years left? I'm sorry. I just couldn't help. I had to do it. So the Chiefs just recently completed their rookie minicamp. We didn't get to see much of FAU because he has he just had surgery on his thumb before the draft, and he's more looking at OTAs to be ready for that. But just wondering, like, from what you saw or heard from the weekend, if you had any thoughts on the Chiefs draft class after the fact and or rookie free agents as reports came out from that minicamp.
Two quick comments I find great. John says, Sterling, the marine biologist, outstanding. I love that. Yeah, I would love to be a marine biologist. That'd be so bad. He'd be like, that is a fish, that's a shark, and now I'm going to die. Chris says, if I like mint juleps, I should grab a bottle of Old Forester mint julep bourbon.
They'll try that.
I've had Old Forester. I've had Old Forester in a mint julep, and I've had Old Forester in a mint julep down at the Kentucky Derby before. I didn't know they had their own mint julep bourbon. I don't know if they have flavored one, but Chris, good looks. I will take a look at that. When it comes to the draft and where they sit right now, I'm intrigued by the lack of pressure that's on them. I'm intrigued by they don't need any one of these guys to necessarily step up and be a starter. They don't need Wanya Morris to be the starting right tackle. They don't need FAU to play 70% of the snap count at edge. I think Charles Aminihu was realistically going to be the starter alongside Karloftis. Rashee Rice, I think you'd like to have a big impact in this offense. But let's be real now. It's going to be Kadarius Toney, if he's healthy, Kadarius Toney is going to be there. Obviously, you're going to have MVS, who's going to be there. You're obviously going to have Sky Moore, who's taking that next step. And I think Sky Moore personally is going to take a huge step this year. You know, Rashee Rice is probably even behind guys like Richie James. I don't know for sure, but I don't think the Chiefs are necessarily needing Rashee Rice or Rashee Rice to be this massive impact player. And that's what's so interesting about this current draft. They can afford to draft some more maybe higher upside dudes and wait. They weren't able to do that last year. Karlaftis needed to come in and be an impact player, or at least a rotational piece week one. Trent McDuffie had to be a starter with the departure of Tre'Davious Ward week one. Like, this is a little different situation. And so for me, I'm intrigued to let them play out and see what it looks like even in year two and year three. It's kind of a different situation from the previous years.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it'll be really interesting. I think they'll need, you know, they'll need on Udike Uzama a lot more than maybe what we're, you know, like Karlaftis played immediate starter reps. I think it's possible he gets in there too, but yeah, you're right. You know, once you sign Donovan Smith, you know, Wanya Morris becomes a redshirt season.
Yeah.
You're right about Rice. I agree with you all the way around. I think if I were to make a bold prediction, I think Chamari Connor, Virginia Tech, fourth round pick, defensive back, has a real shot. I think there's going to be real competition there with him and Mike Edwards, who's slotted to be the third safety after a breakout season with the Buccaneers. You know, remember, Edwards was only playing in Tampa Bay because Antoine Winfield went down for the season. So he stepped up, had a good year. It's a good signing, but the Chiefs liked Connor enough, and they should. He's a Connor. I'm supporting his last name all the way.
That's the only reason why, is because it's the last name. I knew it.
Hey, you don't know. You don't know.
I support Sterling Marlin, the old NASCAR driver. I always rooted for him.
You caught me. Yeah, I think that's going to be a battle. I think that's going to be one to watch. He could be a surprising rookie to get reps in his first season. Yeah. After they traded up for him. Virginia Tech defensive backs, by the way, tend to be pretty pro ready. So, and Connors tend to be pretty pro ready. I'm just
saying. Angry Drunken German says Rice gets the customary red shirt this year. I kind of think the same thing. He'll play a little bit, but not a ton. Nikki M says Tyron wanted to stay. I do think Tyron Matthew, to an extent, did want to stay in Kansas City. Obviously, though, the play didn't materialize on that third season. His first 2 years were great. His first 2 years in Kansas City at safety were phenomenal. That last year, though, left a lot to be desired, and they moved on. But I get what you're saying. That was in regards to our previous conversation of the legacy concern.
Yeah.
But, yeah, Kentucky Derby was this week, and I didn't have a mint julep, and now I'm kind of bummed. Man. With the talk of mint julep, now I'm kind of disappointed in myself. No, I didn't even watch it. I like the Kentucky Derby a lot. I love horses because they're majestic creatures. Like, they're so fun. Watching a horse in person run is an experience unlike any other.
Yeah.
Like, it just the power, it's insane. But no, I didn't watch on TV. It's not as fun on TV.
Yeah. If you had a horse and could enter it into the Kentucky Derby, what would you name your horse?
Chiefs over Bengals.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah. Yeah, Chiefs over Bengals. By the way, everyone in the chat, we do have a Discord. We have a members-only Discord channel. We talk about everything from barbecue. We talk everything about the Chiefs. We talk everything about NCAA, Royals. Whatever you are into, we pretty much have a chat for you, including books. Yes, we even have books. Also, shout out to John Clifford, new AA Rookie Camp member. Shout out to John for joining.
Welcome, John.
Yeah, welcome, John. We also gave out shirts to our, was it 6 month members, if I'm not mistaken. A lot of people are posting their shirts in the Discord channel as well. So you do get some swag, a lot of cool stuff. So if you want to join, it obviously does us a huge solid. Plus, it's fun in general. We like to talk in there and have some fun.
Love it. Love it. Well, folks, we've reached the end of the broadcast. And, you know, if you've been with us for a long time, you know that we close things out with a must list. Richard, where are you at? We need a Richard signal, like a bugle.
I'm right here, fellas. Sorry.
Oh, dude, that's scary. His face was, his dome was right there.
That's a Beastie left. Boys cam. That's a Beastie Boys music it video is. Cam.
Yo, okay. What up? What up?
Yeah.
What you want? What you want?
It's a galactic.
Love it. Love it. If you've reached this part of the show, we just like to recommend things, whatever they are, whether from fine china to the latest shows that we're binging. No one's here actually ever recommended Fine China, have they?
No, maybe next time.
Maybe next time. I don't know. I would like to lead us out just because I want to kick back and make you guys go last.
I recommend Richard's House because I stayed at Richard's house this past week and it was great. Richard, shout out to you. We stayed up pretty late talking about music and just jamming out. It was a pretty good time. Richard's hair is actually way better in person. It's incredible. He puts my hair to shame.
Wait, can we talk about this? You saw Verderam. You stayed at Verderam's and you stayed at Richard's house.
Yeah. Yeah. I stayed at Verderam's one night and Richard's one night. It was great.
Any insider info here that the people want to know, the addicts want to know?
Yeah. What's the most embarrassing thing at my house that you can tell people about?
You had a scary little face, I think, right behind you over your left shoulder right there. Somewhere, and I was terrified. I woke up at like 7 a.m. lights just kind of creeping through, and I'm like, what the fuck is that face? Why? It's like a little mask. Terrified me. Not a fan.
He's actually, I know what he's talking about. He's talking about I have a Master Chief mask that's like painted in psychedelic colors, and apparently that scared him, Chad. The Halo
Chief.
Yeah,
it did. At 7 a.m., you wake up in a place and you see that. Yes, I'm going to be scared.
There you go. Sorry, for the podcast listeners can't see this one, but it's
seriously, you're not going to be all of a sudden you're waking up after a night of a couple of adult beverages and you see that. He did have a Brita. That was clutch. I did get some water from him. So thank you. So I recommend Richard's house and the band Whiskey Myers, who I'm hoping to see on Saturday. Love Whiskey Myers. It's a kind of Southern rock country band. They're really, really good. So I highly recommend Whiskey Myers in Richard's house.
Man, by the way, Sterling's never stayed at my house. I don't know why you've never asked, but also, well, yeah, you're welcome here. You're welcome here anytime. I don't know why you'd come here. Whatever. Why am I even bringing this up? Also, when you said mask, I was picturing like the Jim Carrey mask, like that you had a Jim Carrey mask on your wall.
Yeah, I have some like weird haunted looking mask. Yeah, I'm surprised it was just the video game mask that scared
Sterling.
But yeah, that makes sense, actually.
Richard, you're up next. What do you got?
All right. I'm going to recommend a band I actually saw twice this weekend. That was not even, I didn't do that on purpose. I saw them Saturday, and then they said, we have a second night in Chicago, same venue. And I said, what the hell? I'll take a date. And me and her saw it. Never heard of the band, but she loved them. They're called the Lemon Twigs. They're really cool, kind of vintage sounding 70s rock, pop rock band. I love to say they sound like Big Star. I had many people say they sound like Pet Sound era Beatles or Beach Boys, or The Who. Early Who I've gotten that a lot. But yeah, really, really sweet sound. The kind of stuff you just get, you know, you start having a few drinks and then you're just kind of like swaying in the crowd too. It's really fun. So the Lemon Twigs, and they got this new album. It just came out last week. It's called Everything Harmony. So check out the Lemon Twigs.
I'll check that out. Nice. Mm-hmm. Nice. Have you guys heard of the band Y Oak?
No.
Like W-Y-E Oak?
Not at all.
Okay, anyway, they're kind of like an indie, guy and girl, kind of an indie rock kind of thing going on for years. And anyway, the girl, Jen Wassner, she went solo. She goes by Flock of Dimes, and it's like haunting kind of indie pop kind of stuff. It's like so freaking beautiful. It's great. Anyway. I don't think Sterling would like it. Sterling likes either like, you know, collecting drum heads
I like Rush and Foo Fighters and Whiskey Myers.
Yeah, I don't think
he would like. I like everything though, man. Come on. I like Tool. Yeah, as Trish says, Tool. Tool's awesome. Tool kicks ass.
Yeah, man. Anyway, clearly we've reached the end of our show.
It was better when Tim Grunar was here. We really had the highest highs and all of a sudden we're like, we're limping.
Gave Tim my everything, and then I learned that Sterling's hanging out with everyone but me, and it just put me in a bad mood, and then here we are. Folks, I'm sorry. I'm sour, but not toward you. You all are the best, even if Sterling doesn't want to be friends with me. Hopefully you all will. My name's Matt Connor. We're here with Richard Durante and Sterling, not my friend Holmes. We will be here next week. Also, I'm going to be here later on this week substituting for Patrick Allen. We'll have a couple guests on the show talking all about the Chiefs schedule reveal on Thursday. Come hang out with us. But until then, as always, we appreciate you and go Chiefs.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.